Lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth, the time of the singing of birds is come, and the voice of the turtle is heard in our land.
Throws across his body, and he got it! We're going to wave a can around third. Throw from the outfield is up the line, inside the park home run! Deep, gone! Whoa! Up and he makes a catch up against the wall, and he's gonna watch it fly. Strike three call. He got him on strikes.
Welcome to The Voice of the Turtle, a podcast feature of West of Woodward, online at westofwoodward.com and also on Twitter at VOTT Podcast. I'm your host, Hook Slide, along with my co-host Rob Rojacki of blessyouboys.com and beyondtheboxscore.com. And Rob, this is actually, I was looking through our show notes from the last week into this week. This is our 50th show since we became Voice of the Turtle last summer. I feel like we should have like ordered a cake or something.
Is that like the, what is that, the gold anniversary or silver or what is it?
Pretty sure 50 is, well, now you got me wondering because 75 right? might be silver. I don't know.
I have no idea.
Platinum?
So platinum cake. I'm down for it.
Yeah. I don't think I want to eat a platinum cake, but there it is. So yeah, 50 shows since last summer. That's kind of a cool number, I think. Maybe we should just like call it quits at 50 and say.
I don't know. I mean, this is still fun. We could maybe get to 100.
Okay, we'll go to 100 then.
We're definitely not getting to what is effectively wild at like almost 1,000.
Are they seriously?
Yeah, I don't think we're getting to that.
All right, we got. But,
well, they did it every day too, so they did this for like a couple years and got up to that much.
Well, okay, if you're doing it every day, that's a different story, but still, an accomplishment nonetheless. Couldn't have got here without you fine folks who listen, so thanks for all of that. I wish I had prepared and known this fact before we got into it. I would have, like, written up, like, you know, my favorite memories over the past 50 episodes, you know, but...
How about the part where we yelled at Brad Ausmus, or the part that we yelled at Al Avila, or... Wait, that's, like, every show?
Yeah, or the one where we did drinking games, that's most shows, or...
Yep.
Having Dan Dickerson on was a fun time.
That was definitely a fun time.
We'll
definitely
do that again in a couple months, I think, get him back.
Well, you're gonna repost that, aren't you?
I am, yes. And I should probably get that little bit of housekeeping out of the way. Just the fact that, you know, at some point here, especially with the World Series going on, I think we're probably going to take a week or two off. And when we do that, I'll want to rerun the interviews with Dan Dickerson and also the one with Steve Mickelson, the sportsbook director out of Atlantis Casino. I felt like at the end of the year like that, both of those interviews were very much oriented towards what is the 2016 season going to be like. And kind of fun to go back, I think, now and listen to those predictions from Dan Dickerson and Steve Mickelson and just see how close they were. I remember in particular Steve saying that he thought the San Francisco Giants were favorites for the World Series. And here mm-hmm. we are, and they're not in it. He was kind of high on the Royals this year, too, and they obviously didn't even make the playoffs. So fun stuff, but we'll get to that probably next week after that. We do have a show this week, so, and as we said last week that it was going to be a slow and boring off season, we could not have been more wrong. Al Avila gave his end of season press conference last week and says there are changes coming. It's a process that he says at some points may be painful. So we're going to talk about all of that and what it means for the 2017 Tigers. We've also got listener questions, and then we're going to call it quits for the show because it's also game one of the World Series tonight, and both of us, I know, are eager to catch as much of that game as possible. So first, let's round the bases. Getting leaner, getting younger, right after the break.
Fly ball here to center. Way back in center. Deep. Gone. Whoa, man. Straight away center to the camera well. Three runs shot for Cabrera. As far as you'll see one hit here at Comerica Park. And the Tigers take a 3-0.
So as we begin the show with rounding the bases, our opening segment, we've got to talk about, I think, the one thing that is on all the minds of Tiger fandom. With Al Avila coming out last week, giving his end of season press conference to the media. And some very interesting things coming out of that. The high points, I'll just give you a couple of quotes here. He says, we want to get younger. We want to get leaner.
Don't we all?
Don't we all? I mean, Al included. I don't think what he meant.
Sounds like a New Year's resolution, not a plan for the offseason.
It actually did sound very much. This organization has been working way above its means for some time. I mean, yeah, this is all like, hey, I want to get younger. I want to get leaner, get my finances under control. He gave basically a New Year's resolution speech. Anyway, changes are coming is what he said. He says the Tigers are not going to be players in the offseason free agent market. Interestingly enough, except for some bits and pieces, he said they will need to probably go free agent market to get a backup catcher. And he did acknowledge that Alex Avila is up for consideration. He says it's going to be a process and it might be a painful process. He also said it was probably going to take more than one off season to accomplish it. And I think the quote that's got some fans kind of, you know, a little bit nervous and uncomfortable is when he was asked about the Tigers being contenders next year. He said, "That's our hope. But I can't guarantee that." So some interesting comments. I mean, my goodness, here we thought it was going to be a slow offseason, not a lot going on. But it sounds like he fully intends to not only fill the organization with some young talent, some prospects, get those in the pipeline, but also cut back on the payroll. Your thoughts on all of this? I mean, where do we even begin?
Well, I think some of the things were almost kind of obvious statements from Avila. Saying that the organization has been operating above its means for some time was kind of common knowledge. I don't think many people expected this team to maintain a $200 million payroll for long. We knew that even kind of when they went out and signed Justin Upton, that this was kind of one last push for owner Mike Ilitch to get the World Series trophy that he covet so much. But you almost kind of wonder who exactly is pulling the strings here. Is this like an Al Avila thing saying that he wants to cut back and get younger and whatnot? Or is this more kind of the power struggle between Mike and Chris Ilitch or whoever else is running things up above Al Avila? I think that some of the other rumors that we've heard over the last week, in particular the one that Buster only dropped about Justin Upton potentially being floated as a trade target during the season last year, I thought that was a very kind of interesting and revealing rumor, along with a couple of the other kind of weird things we've heard, just kind of going along between Mike Ilitch wanting to sign Chris Davis and the Tigers not necessarily going out for Upton until kind of the last minute, last January to get him. And so you almost wonder kind of what exactly is going on here. And that's kind of what I drew from this, is that, like, I'm almost just kind of wondering, you know, who exactly is the one signing the checks and making those decisions right now?
Well, there does seem to be some anecdotal evidence, at least, that Chris Ilitch is much more budget-oriented, budget-minded. We've obviously seen with Mike Ilitch, he's more than happy to bust out the the checkbook and write checks for Prince Fielder or for a ridiculous contractor, Victor Martinez, going out and getting Justin Upton. He wanted Chris Davis. You talk about all of this. And I know that, at least according to some theories, that when Mike Ilitch was sick, towards the end of 2013, that kind of coincided with right about the same time that the Tigers decided to dump Doug Fister in kind of a payroll slash move. You might be onto something that, you know, when Chris seems to get more involved, that's when they suddenly get to be more, hey, let's pinch the pennies a little bit. But at the same time, look, this isn't any different from what Al Avila said last year, at least in the sense of we need to build from within. We've got to stop trying to stock the system with expensive free agents.
Yeah, and I'm not necessarily trying to be all doom and gloom when I reference Chris Ilitch potentially being the one making the decisions here. I think the Tigers do need to get younger. They do need to build from within more. What they've been able to do over the last 10 years with basically just burning every last prospect they can is pretty remarkable, to be honest. To be able to stay in contention for this long and to be able to be this successful for so long without having much of a farm system really is phenomenal. And it speaks to just how great Dave Dombrowski was at his job pulling off all those ridiculous trades, as well as just the amazing talent they brought in, how good that their major league scouts have been that they brought in. I mean, you know, you bring in a guy like Doug Fister and he blows up for a couple years. You bring in Anibal Sanchez and he blows up for a couple years. You draft, you know, the few guys that you do kind of draft high in Rick Porcello and Nick Castellanos, for the most part have panned out. I mean, I think the one real high draft pick that didn't pan out for them in kind of that 10-year window is, maybe you could argue like, Cameron Maben, but even then he's still been a pretty productive player. I guess the one is like Jacob Turner, and he had, you know, obviously got flipped for Anibal Sanchez in a move that looked phenomenal at the time. And so I think that the Tigers are definitely kind of trending towards needing to cut back a little bit on payroll. It was just surprising to see Al Avila really kind of dig that deep into it in this press conference right here. And his reference to, I can't remember the exact quote, but saying that, you know, things might be difficult or painful or whatnot. That's an interesting, kind of an interesting choice of words from him. And it does signal to me that someone's getting traded this offseason. I just don't think it's going to be any of the big guys that we're real worried about.
Well, and we can talk about that too, but as you're kind of comparing these two philosophies, the kind of the Dave Dombrowski brute force method, you can buy your way into a World Series if you want to. It doesn't seem to be as easy maybe as it would seem on the surface. If you just stock the roster with a bunch of high-priced all-stars, you'd think you'd have a really good shot, and yet we watched this year, the Dodgers did the exact same thing, right? They've been one of the top five payrolls in baseball right alongside the Tigers for the last several years. They just completed a fourth consecutive year of winning their division title 4 years in a row, just like the Tigers did. And yet, number of World Series wins for the Los Angeles Dodgers is the same as the Tigers. It's zero. In fact, they've never even made the World Series, despite all that big money, all the big superstars. And yet, when you look at what's going on right now, as we sit here and record this, you got the Cleveland Indians, you got the Chicago Cubs. I want to talk about the Cubs specifically. When you get a guy like Theo Epstein, who's going to take the helm, a smart, analytically oriented guy. He did this with Boston. He broke their 86-year curse, or however many years it was, got them into the World Series, got them a couple championships, is now, you know, on the verge of doing the same thing with the Chicago Cubs. They didn't spend a ton of money. They just stocked up on really good prospects and spent wisely, and he got himself a smart manager. It kind of makes me wonder, and it's useless speculation, but I do it anyway. What if Al Avila had been the one running the show since 2006, last 10 years? How different does this farm system look with a guy like that who's more prospect-oriented?
Well, see, the question I have that with that is, you know, does Avila make some of these same moves? Does he build more from within? Or was Dombrowski's kind of MO to trade away all these prospects really more mandated by Mike Ilitch's just desire to burn everything and get the World Series ring at all costs? Because you see Dombrowski, he built farm systems in Montreal and in Miami when he was, you know, doing well there. He didn't necessarily, I think he won one championship with the Marlins. But he was able to build from within, basically kind of build the team a different way than what he's done in Detroit. And to see him kind of go the opposite way here, I think it almost is a little bit more Ilitch mandated. And so that's kind of why I question exactly, you know, who's calling the shots from up top here. But as far as being able to build from within, I still think Avila could do it. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, he's gone out and found talents like Miguel Cabrera, like J.D. Martinez in past lives. And so we'll see what exactly happens with that. The thing that I kind of question is whether he's going to be able to pull off the same kind of trades that Dombrowski did. I know that Dombrowski whiffed on the Doug Fister trade, but, you know, if the Tigers go out and try to trade J.D. Martinez or Ian Kinsler, like, does Avila have the chops to really pull off a great deal and get the prospects back that the Tigers are going to need to stay successful?
Well, he seems to have done better. We talked about that in the past couple podcasts, the fact that he did a lot better with trades in 2016 than he did with free agent signings. So he may still have at least the ability. You talk about him being the one that spotted Miguel Cabrera and spotted the talent in J.D. Martinez. He does seem to have a good scout's eye for the talent. But to your point, does he have the business savvy to kind of do some fleecing the way that Dave Dombrowski used to be able to? Tough to know, like you said, how the organizational philosophy, how much of that was Dombrowski versus how much of that was Ilitch just riding his back like a bad monkey. Dombrowski went to Boston and did the same thing, you know, presumably without a Mike Ilitch there to you know, tell him to do that. And he talked about dismantling their analytics systems once he got there. So there does seem to be a little bit of a philosophical difference between the way those two guys run an organization. But look, Dave Dombrowski left town, and what was the last thing he did before he went? I mean, he pulled off a pretty good deal with bringing in Norris, Boyd, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, and that's the sad part is that's the kind of thing that the Tigers need to do if they're going to stay competitive, especially in 2017, is to be able to pull off that trade that you get guys back who are able to contribute right away or very close to right away. I mean, yeah, you could sell off J.D. Martinez for a couple of lottery ticket type prospects, guys who, you know, in the future, you know, in 3, 4, 5 years down the road could potentially be superstars, but to get guys back that are going to be able to contribute right away, I think is a big challenge for them. And I think that this rebuilding on the fly is a lot harder than people realize. I mean, the Tigers have been able to do it because of all the amazing trades that they pulled off, whether it's trading Curtis Granderson for, you know, Max Scherzer and, God, I'm blinking on who else, Austin Jackson, or the deal that we're mentioning now, getting, you know, Michael Fulmer and Daniel Norris and whatnot. You know, is Alavila going to be able to do that? And that's kind of the question I have going forward.
And they did, in a sense, they kind of lucked out on Fulmer, him being so close to being MLB ready. I think he got there a little earlier than anyone thought. Even Daniel Norris is still kind of maybe a year out from being that, you know, that good of a player. But yes, to your point, it's they need to get players, then prospects, who are going to be ready to contribute at least within a year or two. Otherwise, we are going to be looking at you know, a 2 to 3, 4 year stretch where it's just, it's not going to be a competitive team. It's not going to be a fun team to watch. So can they find that kind of talent? And that leads to my next point. If you're going to find that good of a talent, a talent that's that close to being ready to contribute, you're going to have to part with some prospects that are, to use Avila's words, it might be painful to go through this process. You think JD Martinez has a shot at lasting with the Tigers through 2017?
See, I don't know. I don't even know if he's going to be around in 2017. It seems
that's
like, if
saying,
you're going
to... Is he even going to make it
to 2017?
To opening day 2017.
You look at this roster, and he's definitely the one that you could really kind of see them parting with, because they have guys in the pipeline. You know, I mean, maybe, you know, Tyler Collins and Stephen Moya aren't the best guys to fill that role, but they could fill that with someone. Like, if they trade Ian Kinsler, who plays second base next year?
Well, yeah. I mean, they don't really have Dixon Machado is the only one that comes to mind.
I mean, yeah, he's maybe the only one. And so you see someone like JD Martinez maybe filling in there. I mean, if you trade Jose Iglesias, Dixon Machado could play shortstop there and full kind of fill that role. Maybe now he's not going to hit quite as well as Iglesias did, but he's going to provide the defensive value at that premium position. If you trade someone, even if you trade Justin Upton, again, you have the same guys in the outfield that could potentially fill in, but trading away someone like Kinsler is going to be a little bit tough. And I think that with Martinez only having one more year, an affordable year at that, before free agency, I think he's going to be the easiest one to move and probably the one that's most likely to go.
It's a good time to kind of talk about that, just even, you know, the conversations that I've had with people in the last week about who might be traded, who might not be traded. And it's like, if you're going to have these kind of discussions, if you're going to try to analyze the process, you have to detach your fan mindset. And you got to begin to think like a GM. You know, it doesn't matter at this point that, hey, you can't trade Kinsler because he's good. Well, yeah, that's the point, because that's exactly who you want to trade. I think the value in making these kinds of trades is you have to have a player who is, A, doesn't have a lot of time left in the contract. That makes him more appealing to the potential trade partner team. And B, has some, you know, some real value war, or whatever you want to go by, to contribute. Martinez is a great example of someone who's got a year left, and he's a very valuable player. Kinsler's only got a year left, plus the $5 million buyout, you know, highly valuable player right now. In fact, now might be the best time to sell high on Kinsler, because he just had 2 great years in a row.
Yeah, he's had 2 great years in a row, and middle infielders really tend to age like dirt. And so if you can part with Kinsler and get something back in return, maybe a guy, like, see, that's the tough part with Kinsler, though, is that, like, what team is going to trade a major league ready second baseman for a guy like Kinsler who is going to be more expensive? You know, if a team has a player that's ready to step in and play second base for them, why are they going to part with that guy to begin with? So it's definitely a tough spot for the Tigers, not having anyone ready to fill in right away. And so we might even see multiple moves. As far as like the fan mindset, I think the only guys that I would really be bent out of shape about trading are Miguel Cabrera and Justin Verlander. And luckily they both have 10 and 5, right? So they're in, you know, ridiculous contracts. So they're probably the least likely to move on.
Yeah, in terms of real world, you know, gambling on this, yeah, they are the least likely ones to move. I'm not the least bit concerned that either of them would move. But if you can divorce yourself from the fan mindset and just look at it strictly as a column in a spreadsheet, man, Miguel Cabrera would make the most sense. If you're talking about being able to slash $30 million off the payroll immediately in his contract, being able to pull back some pretty decent prospects, I would think, for a future Hall of Famer, and then you've only opened up one hole on the roster that needs to be filled, versus trying to do this with, you know, trading Martinez, trading Kinsler, trading Upton, you've opened up a bunch of holes. It's not going to happen, but it seems to, like, on paper, that would make the most sense, even though, forget it, it's no way.
I'm not even going to respond to that.
There's no way it's going to happen. It won't. They're going to take him. They're going to, in his last year of the contract, they're going to dip him in bronze and then stick him out there with the statues of Al Kaline and Willie Horton and all the rest. So don't.
Well, hopefully he's in like a better pose than Han Solo was when he got
It all depends on if
at least get him like in the batting stance, right? First, guys.
Why do I have to hold this stance? You'll see. Hold on. Oh, boy. So that's who's not getting traded. Justin Upton, I think, is a little bit more tricky. He's more of a gamble for a potential trade partner just because he does have 5 years guaranteed. It's up to him whether he wants to take the option on his contract next year. But that's a little bit heavier of a salary, I think, and I'm not sure you're going to get as much of value out of him. What you were talking about earlier, though, like how do you trade, say, Ian Kinsler and then get a second base, an MLB-ready second baseman back in return? I don't think you can. I think you have to do the crisscross thing. You got to trade J.D. Martinez for a second baseman and then, you know, trade Kinsler for an outfielder or whoever it is. But do you realize that if they trade Martinez and they also trade Upton and then somehow don't pick up the option on Maben, the whole outfield is shot? Like, the whole outfield is now empty at that point.
Yeah, I mean, they would be, with Cameron Maben, if they don't pick up that option, that's really kind of a red flag to me, because it's such an easy, you know, it's an easy $9 million to pay to a guy who, even when he was, like, even though he only played, like, half the games, still was worth more than $9 million if you go by, you know, how much money teams are paying per win on the free agent market. And so that one's just a no-brainer to me. I mean, they're going to have to replace him after 2017, but if they don't pick it up now, that's just kind of a big red flag as far as just something's not really right. If they're letting either him or K-Rod, if either one of those options don't get picked up, I would really kind of be concerned about where this offseason is heading.
And you have to keep in mind, too, is what you're going to get in return for a Cameron Maben or a K-Rod. And the general rule of thumb is whatever you gave up to get them is probably what you're going to get in return if you try to trade them. Well, what did they trade to get K-Rod? A middling, you know, infield fringe prospect. That's all you're going to get in return if you try to trade him. What'd they get for Cameron Maben? They had to give up Ian Kroll, right? If you try to trade Maben, that's what you're going to get back is an Ian Kroll type. It's not worth putting these guys on the market.
Well, even if you do try to trade these guys, that's fine. It's just letting them go on that option, like paying the buyout on Maben's option, which I think is like $500,000 or $1 million, instead of picking up that option. And whether you know, use him in 2017 or trade him, that's fine. It's just if they let him go and don't try to pick up that option and do something with him in that contract, I think that's the big red flag.
So you're saying get something. Don't just let him walk. Get something.
If you don't want to have Cameron Maben or K-Rod around next year, pick up the option and trade him.
Right.
Like, you can get something out of it, even if it is just kind of a middling infield prospect. I mean, Javier Betancourt was looking okay in the Tiger system. It was a guy who, you know, maybe he could be like a utility infielder type. Getting something like that out of a trade is still valuable.
Here's the big question that I've had. Other people have said the same thing. Why not just wait until next year to do all of this? I mean, you have a good team. You had a team that came really close to making the postseason this year. Why not just keep this core team together and then worry about slashing payroll and trying to get prospects, et cetera, next year? Why not just stick with the horses that you have right now?
I mean, that's, you know, kind of the big question. And then that's kind of what I would hope that the Tigers would do. The one exception I think there would be J.D. Martinez. I think that if the Tigers do try to trade him this offseason, they can recoup a little bit more value from him than they would get if they not only kept him around next year, but just recoup the first round pick that he would get in, or that he would get back as far as like free agent compensation. I think that if you're able to trade away Martinez now, you can extract a little bit more value from him, because not only are you trading him and you're getting the prospects in return, but you could also demand a little bit more, kind of similar to what they did with the Cespedes trade, when they got, or with the Porcello trade, I should say, when they got Cespedes and they also got Alex Wilson and a prospect back, that because you can say, you know, going to be able to get this first round pick next year, then you can pull a little bit more value out of another team for that. And so, again, that's another reason why I think Martinez is the most likely to be moved, is because I think the Tigers will try to recoup a little bit more value from his contract than just, you know, him playing next year and then taking the comp pick when he walks.
It's the only thing that makes sense to me in terms of why not just, you know, kind of wait until the end of 2017 season and then try to do this. It's because so many of these guys do come off the books in a way that really all you're going to get in return from them is, you know, comp picks. That's about it. If you want to actually pull some good prospects, you could be in a real bad situation if you wait until next year and just get comp picks from these guys and then you draft next year. That's great, but it's going to take, what, 3-4 more years before those draft picks can do jack squat for you.
Well, yeah, and even then, I mean, you have... After 2017, I'm trying to think of who exactly is not around. I mean, you have to replace J.D. Martinez. Mm-hmm. You maybe have to replace Justin Upton at that point. But even then, that's still kind of a toss up. You basically have to replace the entire outfield, but that's about it. I mean, Ian Kinsler still has another option year left.
The pitching staff, so, you got Pelfrey, you know, dropping off. Sanchez drops off. Lowe drops off.
So they're going to be better. Great.
Exactly. But now you got to fill those spots, and you're back to the spot, the space of saying, I don't have guys in the pipeline to fill these spots, so now I got to go out and spend money again.
But after two more years, I almost do wonder if the pitching staff might be a little bit more ready to fill that hole. I mean, you've got guys like Tyler Alexander down the minors who had a pretty good year this year. Spencer Turnbull was injured for most of the year. You have a couple of guys coming up from West Michigan and Lakeland and whatnot. I think they're going to be able to find, you know, out of all these arms that they've drafted in kind of the middle rounds, I think they're going to be able to find someone like a Buck Farmer type that could be like your sixth or seventh starter, because they already have the five-man rotation set. And so I'm not as worried about things on the pitching side, just because they have all these young starters. They still have Zimmerman and Verlander around at the top of the rotation. And you can wonder about Zimmerman, but I think that's kind of a different conversation. Mm-hmm. But as far as going forward, it's really kind of on the position player side. Like, you wonder what exactly they're going to do, and particularly with that outfield, you know, maybe with the middle infield with Kinsler or Iglesias, if they decide to move one of those guys. I think those are really where the big questions are.
And Al Avila did address that subject in kind of a lengthy quote. I'll just pull some of the more salient tidbits of this about why not just wait till next year to do this? Why not try again with the same core team? And he said, if you stay status quo, it doesn't tell you that people might get hurt next year, and you're not going to get people that don't perform as expected next year, because he's talking about Zimmerman falling off a cliff, Pelfrey falling off a cliff, Upton falling off a cliff. And he says it's not as easy and clear-cut as that. If you look at the organization and the depth and the lack of depth, hi, Al, it's really dangerous to say you can make it that simple. You're going to need more than that starting rotation. I find it interesting that he said that. You're going to need more than that starting rotation to do what they're talking about.
Yeah, and so it does make me almost wonder if they're going to trade someone like Martinez or, you know, whoever else for a little bit more pitching. To try to get more arms in the rotation. And so more arms are never a bad thing. I don't think you're going to go out and get like an ace or anything like that, or an ace in the making. I mean, maybe you hit it big with a guy like Fulmer or whatnot. You know, a guy like Fulmer who was supposed to have like a mid-rotation upside and then just came out this year, and so much for that. And so we'll see what happens with that. They already do have the makings of a pretty good rotation in 2017 with the five guys we mentioned, along with Sanchez and Pelfrey and a couple of the others for depth. And so I think you can make things work, especially if Zimmerman comes back healthy and is pitching well. And so that's another interesting quote. I hadn't actually seen that one before, so I'm curious to see what exactly unfolds from that. But I think that overall the pitching is, you know, kind of in a good place right now.
Yeah, and let me just cite the source on that one, because I always want to give a shout out to my friend Matthew Mowry from the Oakland Press. He's the one that picked that quote up and wrote the article. Going for it one more time doesn't benefit Tigers was the name of the piece. It's at theoaklandpress.com. He has like a full two paragraphs more of that quote. That's very interesting to me. If you want a more of an inside view on what's going on in Alavila's head, there's a lot of material there to look through. Another note I made here as part of his press conference, I found it interesting that he said that not only do they need more left-handed hitters in the lineup, but he specifically mentioned Kristen Stewart as being a potential option, someone that could come into the outfield and be add another left-handed bat to their lineup. And he said maybe even in 2017. This is a guy that I don't think I was thinking was going to be up in the big leagues until at least 2018, but Al Avila is apparently saying possibly even as early as next year. They're looking at him seriously enough that Al Avila felt it necessary to defend his defense and said that Stewart's not going to be a gold glover, but he said, quote, the word is adequate. So he's already talking in terms of maybe you get Kristen Stewart as a replacement in the outfield for somebody. I would have to think that JD is the most obvious choice.
Yeah, and that's the other reason why I think that, you know, someone like JD Martinez might be a little bit more likely to move on, just because they have these other guys in the pipeline. I mentioned that Moya and Collins before. I kind of thought of them as kind of like the 2017 placeholders for someone like Stewart or Gerber going into 2018. Stewart's numbers definitely fell off a little bit when he went from Lakeland to Erie last year, and so it'll be interesting to see how he does. Word is he's not doing very well in the Arizona Fall League right now, but that's only been a couple weeks. And so, you know, who knows what happens with that. If he has a good week, he'll be, you know, back to normal as far as those numbers are. But I do kind of wonder if a guy with only 100 plate appearances at the AA level would be ready for, you know, some big time performance in at bats in 2017. And so we'll see. It may be kind of one of those scenarios where he has to force his way out of the team too. You know, if he hits well in spring training, he goes down the minors and really kind of tears it up for the first month or two, then maybe he's up in the major leagues. And so I think that's more kind of what Avila is doing, almost like hedging his bets more so than actually saying like, yeah, this kid's definitely going to be up in 2017.
Well, what's for certain, I think, is that you will see Kristen Stewart at spring training in 2017. And, like you said, that's why I didn't think he would be a real strong candidate until 2018, because, again, he's only played up to the double-A level. He hasn't even done time in Toledo yet. So to see him take that big of a jump and come to the major league level when he has not shown necessarily signs of just, you know, going out and conquering every single – I mean, he hit 30 home runs altogether. I think 26 of those came at – Advanced A in Lakeland, 24 or something like that.
We had 24 of them down there, and that's a league you don't hit homers in.
Right.
I think the league leader last year had like 14 or 15, and he passed that in June. So definitely had a monster year down there. I know a lot of people were kind of crowing as to why he wasn't up in Erie earlier. With him being that far away from the majors, I was kind of wondering of, you know, during the season, like, why wasn't he up? But when he's that far away from the majors, I don't think you need to push him too much. Advanced college bats like him, you know, if they are legit, they will move quickly through the minor leagues. And so if he comes down, I think he'll probably start at AA next year. And if he's tearing it up, I mean, I think you could just call him up right away. You don't even necessarily need to take him to the AAA level, because I think that line between double and AAA has kind of been blurred in recent years. We've seen a lot of prospects come up from the AA level and perform very well right away. And so we'll see what happens with him, but it'll be interesting to see how he does next year early in the season.
Well, we'll certainly get a crack at him in spring training. There's no question in my mind about that. He's a classic. You talk about college bats that move quickly. I mean, he's an all power bat. He's not going to hit for average. He's not going to tear it up on the base paths. His defense is, again, to use Avila's word, it's adequate. The only reason that you need a guy like this is because he's going to hit you, 25, 30 home runs a year. He's definitely got that. So we'll just see what becomes of that next year and how quickly he can advance. But, I would have a hard time seeing. He's only 22. He'll be 23 in December, I think. So I would be shocked to see a 23-year-old who's only played at the AA level take that big of a jump. I mean, boy, more power to him if he can do it. That would be a big help. But moving on, the last kind of point that came out, which is kind of a fun note, it was Anthony Fennec pointed out that Al Avila said the Tigers are actually building a new analytical software system. They're finally building their own system from scratch, like so many of the teams before them. The Pirates did it. The Indians did it. You know, the Oakland A's did it. And they're calling it Caesar.
Caesar, really? That's the name they came up with.
Caesar. Yeah.
Oh.
Now, look, you've got Jay Sartori, who they just hired over last year, came from Apple, right? He was an Apple executive working in their sports and entertainment app division. You got a guy like Sartori coming over. You couldn't do better than Caesar. You couldn't do, like, I War or I Win or something other than Caesar. I mean, I know it's the pizza thing, but still.
I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think back of, like, past Tigers who had interesting names, and I'm kind of blanking on them because like their best players in the past were named like Hank and Hal and Charlie.
Right?
And so that's not exactly like the most exciting name for a software system. So back to the drawing board with that one, I think.
Yeah. We'll take listener suggestions on a much better name for that system. But the fact that they're building one, I think, is a really good sign. I mean, it was nice to have them bring in extra analysts last year and kind of make that commitment, more hires, more consultants. But now they're actually doing the thing where they're building out their own system, collecting their own data. This could get interesting.
See, now I just picture it like the computer from Iron Man that like talks to him and stuff. What was his name? Jarvis?
Yes.
Like the AI who just like talks to him. I'm totally picturing that now, like in Al Avila's office, and like Al's like, I can't turn my computer on. It's like, all right. Yeah.
I'm hoping that is the system, but that they can somehow pipe it into the dugout so that when Osmus is walking around down there going, boy, what do I do here? It's the seventh inning, and we've been through the lineup. Jarvis can just kind of step in and be like, listen, dipshit, take him out. Bring in your closer, even though it's the seventh inning. That's what you want to do.
That'd be kind of cool.
I would be all for that. Final note before we move on to the next segment. There was some movement, however boring it might seem, but Wally Joyner is gone, and in his place, legendary Lloyd is back. Lloyd McClendon comes back as the Tigers' hitting coach, and with him, assistant Bull Durham. Yay?
I mean, people were pissed about this. Everyone's like, this is terrible, and I don't care. What is a hitting coach? Like, if someone can tell me what a hitting coach does at the major league level, maybe I'll have an opinion on this.
Well, then, exactly. And why did Wally Joyner get the boot? I mean, the guy came on board when Ausmus did, so he came in 2014.
Well, they didn't even say that he was fired. They said he was going to, like, pursue other things. So, like, did he get fired, or did he was he just like, I'm going to go do other stuff?
I mean, you look at that lineup, right? Your Cabreras, your Martinez, the guys that like can rake up there, right? I would imagine for a guy like Wally Joyner, it's got to be boring as hell. Just like, there's nothing for me to do here. Just I'll walk. I'm going to go pursue.
Yeah, and you take a look at like a few anecdotes, like Nick Castellanos with his little breakout. You know, did Joyner have a role in that? Was that Ausmus? You know, who exactly was the one that kind of spawned that? You take a look at, you know, Justin Upton earlier this year. Was that Joyner that was, you know, kind of the one that helped unlock his swing? And so I think there are probably anecdotes on both sides to players who, you know, who did or did not fare well. And I think it's just, you know, too complicated, and there are too many factors involved to definitively say, like, yeah, Wally Joyner was good or bad at his job.
I think there's still some points of interest in this. And the first thing that comes to mind is that Bull Durham, at least when I talked to Nick Castellanos at the winter banquet last January, he mentioned Bull Durham by name as someone that he really, really enjoyed and learned a lot from. So that's a good thing to have that guy come up. He's gotten good reviews from at least one of the players. But just the fact that there's this kind of movement, I don't know if you caught this earlier last week, or I should say later last week, that the Whitecaps did the shuffle. They hired a new manager and a new, I think, pitching coach, and they promoted those two guys up to the Lakeland level. They've obviously moved Lloyd McClendon out of the management spot in Toledo and brought him up to Detroit. I haven't heard who's going to replace him at the Toledo level, who's managing the Mudheads next year. But in the back of my mind, Rob, I'm thinking about what Al Avila said last year about the Tigers' way, about wanting to get a system implemented in the minor leagues where they could have uniformity across, you know, across all the levels. And I'm just kind of wondering if this is part of accomplishing that now.
I don't know if we're going to see, like, you know, weird changes like that. Like, I don't think we're going to see whoever the Whitecaps manager is. I don't think we're going to see him progress with them through all levels because you have some guys, I think, who is it? Which Parrish is it? Is it Lance or Larry Parrish? That's the manager in Erie. I think one of them was in Toledo and one of them was in Erie. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some of those guys have been there for a little while, and I just don't think you'll see guys go from level to level to level like that because, you know, these are, you know, people with families and stuff and the management and the coaching staff. I don't think they're going to want to go to a different city every year. And so I don't think we're going to see anything drastic like that. But I do wonder kind of what exactly the Tigers plan with, God, I'm blanking on the Whitecaps manager's name.
It was Andrew Graham.
Oh, Andrew Graham, yeah. I wonder if they're putting him in Lakeland more as, you know, kind of a way for him to be a bit more involved as far as with the instructional league and the other kind of prospects down there as well. As that, you know, Lakeland's kind of, I guess, the base of the Tigers operations, at least from a minor league standpoint. And so is there a little bit more involved with that job than just managing that team?
Good question. It kind of struck me as a little bit interesting to see that much movement in the managerial and coaching positions at the minor league levels when there's been no such shift, you know, at the major league level, obviously. You kind of expect that with a new manager coming in and kind of moving things around, but suddenly here it is. There was really no reason to move Andrew Graham because he was doing a fantastic job with the Whitecaps. He won the championship with them last year and so forth, but would love to know what the philosophy is right now behind making these little moves.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe it was like a type of thing that, like, you know, they were looking for someone and he just like, I want to live somewhere warmer and went there. Well, I mean, it could literally just be as simple as that.
Could be.
We have no idea.
But, I mean, it's a long winter, so I have to spin theories out of something. And Andrew Graham moving to Lakeland just because of the warmer weather is not really going to fill up enough time for me. So
he is Australian, so
he is Australian.
It's viable.
And Florida is a lot like Australia, I think.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that can kill you and it's warmer and...
A lot of kangaroos in Florida.
Yep.
Maybe not. I don't know where that's going. Anyway, any final comments here before we bail out of this and go into the mob scene?
No, not particularly. I'm just very interested to see how the offseason is going to unfold, and it's not going to happen until after the World Series is over, unfortunately.
I'll make you make the predictions now then. Just simple yes, no. Is JD Martinez getting traded?
Yes.
Is Ian Kinsler getting traded?
No.
Justin Upton?
No.
K-Rod?
No. So not in the offseason.
Is anybody getting traded outside of JD Martinez?
I'm gonna throw a dark horse out here, and I think Jose Iglesias gets moved.
Ooh, really?
Yeah. I think that he is a decent target. I think he only has 2 years left until free agency. Mm-hmm. He's Scott Boras' client, so he's not going to sign an extension. And you have a guy in Dixon Machado who could fill that role fairly adequately. He's not going to be as valuable as Iglesias, but if you get a decent return for a guy like Iglesias, you could feasibly start Machado there if you improve the roster elsewhere. The other problem with this theory is that like nobody needs a shortstop right now because there are a zillion really, really good ones like Carlos Correa and Francisco Lindor and whatnot. Like everyone has like this ridiculous shortstop, and Jose Iglesias is kind of subpar compared to some of the other just ridiculous talents out there right now.
I mean, I love me some Iggy, don't get me wrong, but I just don't see him bringing back the kind of prospect who's going to be good. A potential, you know, all-star prospect who's going to be MLB ready within a year or two. I think you can get that out of JD Martinez, but probably not Jose Iglesias.
I don't know. I mean, you asked me to predict stuff, and so
Fair enough. I'm saying JD Martinez is gone for sure, and I'm also saying Kinsler. I think Kinsler's gone. Those are the only two, though.
There would be some very upset fans, both male and female, in the Tigers fan base without.
You know, what are you going to do? We're running a business, damn it. We got to make changes. We got to get leaner and younger, and it's going to be painful. Man, I'm just glad we're going to have shows to do this offseason.
Kinsler is one of the lean ones, too. Like, we're just going to get fatter if he gets traded.
Well, not if they get, like, a really hot prospect back who costs league minimum.
See, this is the other reason why I think Dixon Machado starts next year is because he's so skinny. Definitely leaner. Tigers will definitely be leaner with Dixon Machado in the lineup.
How awesome would this be if it really turns out he was just simply talking about a collective team body mass index? So that's all we're doing is bringing out guys like Steven Moya is, you know, he's tall and skinny, and Dixon Machado is just skinny. And so it does not bode well for Cabrera, I'm afraid. Sorry.
No, he's not getting moved. It's not happening.
Because they can't move him. He's not lean enough. All right, that's enough of that. We'll take a quick break. Come back with your questions into the mob scene at home. We are preparing for change right after the break.
Swinging a fly ball to left field. This one's deep. Going back. Gentry at the fence. It's gone. Wow. It's gone. A walk-off grand slam in the bottom of the ninth for Roger Davis. Incredible. Around third. Into the mob.
And into the mob scene at home we go. We are cutting this show short because the World Series is happening and I kind of want to watch it. So all the segments are dispensed with. We're going to go right to our listener questions. We got quite a few today. Thank you guys so much for always providing that great listener question content. You can reach us on Twitter at VOTT Podcast. That's where to send those questions. Let's get right into it. Jeremy Troya starts us off with, why did it take the Tigers until 2016 to build an analytics department? The Red Sox hired Bill M.F.N. James in 2002. Why?
Well, I think part of it does have to do with Dave Dombrowski. For all of his talents, he really wasn't kind of a saber-minded GM. They had analysts and whatnot before that, but word is that those guys weren't really listened to very much. And now that you get Avila in there, and from day one, he's saying they're going to do more as far as building an analytics department and, you know, all these things. He basically like tripled the size of their statistical department, if not more, when he was hired. And so, yeah, the Tigers are definitely behind the times, and Avila said that from day one. And so it's unfortunate, but that's just kind of the way it is. You know, with all the success the Tigers had from 2006 onward, I'm not really bitter about it, if that gives people any less reason to be mad.
Yeah, I'm not bitter about it. I do wish they'd gotten a little bit out ahead of that. I mean, for Al Avila to be saying we're behind the eight ball, way behind the eight ball, we need to catch up, that's not a good place to be. And I think the Tigers were one of the last teams to get on board the analytics train. I think they could have done that a lot sooner. But again, as you talk about, if you got Dave Dombrowski and Mike Ilitch pulling all the strings, you don't need an analytics department if you have millions and millions of dollars to just buy all-stars off the block. Go for it. It doesn't take a lot of analysis to do that. So I think that's Dave Dombrowski is evil and bad and hates analytics, and that's what happened. So now you can at me on Twitter and tell me how awful I am for saying bad things about St. Dave. Jan Dodge says, another lesson in sabermetrics, please. Here's one that I just picked up in an article. UZR. Is this some Russian trying to hack into our baseball?
Was that her question? You didn't write that. Okay. So, no, UZR stands for Ultimate Zone Rating. It is a fielding stat. And long story short, positive numbers are good, negative numbers are bad, and zero is league average. And so when you see the Tigers way down at the bottom, that tells you that they're doing pretty bad. One other thing with UZR, as well as other defensive metrics, is that one season, even a full season, isn't always necessarily a great sample to go on. And so with most of these, it's more important to get multiple years to be able to analyze whether a fielder is actually good or bad or whatnot. And so basically the sad part with these is that you almost have to get like halfway through their careers to tell if they're actually any good defensively or not.
Yeah, I would imagine that defensive stats, you know, like defensive runs saved and UZR and so on and so forth, will eventually give way to more of the StatCast type data where they can track route efficiency and, you know, number of feet on the ground covered, that kind of thing. But with UZR, I don't know as much about that one. Correct me if I'm wrong, though. I believe what they did is they mapped out a zone for each player. And so, like, for a second baseman, you should be able to cover, let's say, 5 feet to your right, 5 feet to your left, for example. And what they've done mm-hmm. then is for every ball hit towards that player, they've kind of measured how many balls in his zone did he get to or outside of his zone, you know, and that's how they kind of you come up with that number, basically.
Yeah. And so you also see, paired with UZR, you'll see something called, I think it's like OOZ, that stands for out of zone plays. And that's just kind of a tally marker, really. There's no like positive or negative. That's just a straight counting stat to determine how many plays outside of the zone that player has made. One that I was always kind of keeping an eye on was Austin Jackson with that number, because he, I think from like 2010 to, or whenever he came in, from like 2010 to 2013 or 2014, he was like far and away ahead of most other center fielders in that stat. And so it was always kind of an interesting one to keep track of with him.
So I hope that helps, Jan. That's UZR. Is UZR included in the defensive run saved equation? I can't remember if it is or not.
I don't think it is. I think those two are independent.
Okay. UZR gets included in one of those. Maybe it's Fangraph's defensive runs above average.
I think it's either their defensive run above average or just their total wins above replacement calculation, one of those two.
Maybe. So that's why I tend not to use UZR, because I know they've rolled it into another stat that seems to make a little more sense. But anyway, I know Jan asked a couple other questions, more about what Alavila is going to be doing in the offseason and who's going to get traded and not, and we kind of covered that in detail, so I'm going to pass over those since we talked about that in the first segment. Goggles On says, on the Tigers trying to trade Upton during the season, if they trade Upton now, does JD stay?
It's a little bit weird that the Tigers would have tried to trade Justin Upton this early, and it does kind of signal towards, you know, a little bit of a power struggle at the top, because if this was strictly Alavila calling the shots and the owners were out of the way, why exactly would he try to trade Justin Upton just a few months after signing him? In one part, it is kind of, you know, bad practice for the Tigers to do that, you know, to sign a free agent to this big money deal and then try to ship him out right away. It reeks of what the Miami Marlins did in, 2013, 2014 or something like that, when they signed all those guys like Jose Reyes and a couple others and then traded him to Toronto the next year. It really just kind of leaves a bad taste in players' mouths, and they're not as likely to sign with you as a free agent if they know you're going to try to trade them right away the next year.
It also is not very smart baseball, I don't think, and I can't imagine Alavila being behind that kind of a decision, because look, if they were trying to do that mid-season, right, that was when Upton's value had to be at its lowest point. He didn't really spike until late August, you know, and then throughout September. Why on earth would you buy high on a guy and then try to sell low? That, I mean, that's just, yeah, that's got to be some weird stuff going on above Alavila's head. I can't imagine that he tried too terribly hard to trade Upton at that point. But anyway, the second part of the question is, if they trade Upton, does JD stay and take his spot?
No, I don't think so. I'm almost kind of thinking that they're both gone. It depends on when Upton goes, you know, if he gets traded or if he opts out, I think they'll both be gone. I just don't see JD Martinez staying in Tigers uniform all that much longer with, you know, all the kind of, I guess, benefit. I don't even want to say benefits, but all the reasons, I guess, to trade him now compared to hanging on to him and potentially trying to extend him if and when Upton opts out.
His contract comes up, you know, it's over in 2017 anyway, so you're going to have to pay this guy a lot of money to keep him. He's not staying beyond 2017, and as we were saying in the first segment, you might as well get something of value out of JD Martinez in a trade rather than wait for him to reach the end of the contract and then only get a comp pick. I would almost say the same thing for Upton. There's probably more value in trying to trade him now before he opts out, and then you get kind of nothing in return for him, but it's easier, I think, to trade JD than it is to trade Justin Upton. Grandmaster Matt says, who's the 2017 Tigers version of Mike Avilas?
One's tough to say. Well, I don't necessarily know that the Tigers are going to have that kind of player like that. I mean, maybe you could say someone like Mike Palfrey, but I would almost lean towards Dixon Machado just because he looks like he's going to be the second utility infielder on the roster, and people are going to hate him for that.
Yeah, if we're talking about who fills that spot as a utility player, you know, you've got Andrew Romine. If you mean by that who takes Avilas' spot as the whipping boy, I will go back to what Al Avila said earlier about possibly signing Alex Avila as a backup catcher.
Oh, yeah, good point.
He will end up being the whipping boy.
Oh, God, and I hope it happens too.
No more said about that. Jay wants to know which late... Oh, this is a World Series question. This is not a Tigers question. Which late World Series roster addition will have a bigger impact, Danny Salazar or Kyle Schwarber?
I think it's going to be Salazar, because I think that there's a very good chance that Salazar starts game three or game four for the Indians. As far as positive or negative impact, that one's tough to say, but I think that Salazar, you know, being able to start at least one game, I think is going to be a little bit more, it's going to be very interesting to see. It'll probably start game three, because I think the Indians have already said that Kluber will go in game four and game seven. So we'll see how that goes, but I think that with Schwarber only, you know, DHing for them, he's probably not going to play the field. He's probably not going to hit very much other than maybe in a pinch hitting role in Chicago. And so I think that Salazar is going to have more of a chance to have an impact on the series.
Yep. I think it's a simple matter of volume, you know, innings played, that kind of thing. And Salazar will be able to have much more opportunity to make a huge impact. Plus the fact that he played for most of 2016. He just went off for a short time on the disabled list because of this, you know, this injury. But he did play for quite a while, and Schwarber did not. He got all of how many at-bats? 20, something like that? He was out like April 7th.
He
was
something like that. And he had a couple at-bats in the Arizona Fall League.
Right.
Jenmac Ramos, a writer for like every other website on the internet, I think she writes for like two or three SB Nation sites, she had, you know, been to the Arizona Fall League and seen Schwarber hit, and she said that he just looked awful at the plate. Like, his timing was off, his swing looked bad, just all these different things. And so it'll be interesting to see how he does in the series, but they might just kind of be trying to rush him back a little bit too quick here.
But he's a postseason hero, and it's the postseason and magic happens, so he's of course going to hit like six home runs, and three of them will be game winners. So, you
know, I mean, it really only takes one swing. He could go like 1 for 18, but if that one home run matters.
He does hit bombs, doesn't he? I mean, remember last postseason? Oh, that was a beautiful thing to watch. Jay has a follow-up question.
Well, hold on. Even with that Schwarber thing, like, remember back to the 88 World Series? Like, how many at-bats did Kirk Gibson have in that World Series?
One. He had the one.
And that's the only one you see now.
That's the only part of that entire series that anyone remembers.
Yeah.
Like, does anyone even remember the final out?
No.
No.
No. Yeah, that's it. That's the only one they remember. So
pretty sure Oral Hershiser pitched on short rest and threw like a complete game to win the series, and no one remembers that. Everyone remembers Gibby's home run.
Gibby's home run, the only at bat. I'm looking at now, his only at bat in that series. And so if Schwarber does that, then people might remember that.
That is all it takes. In fact, it was such a dramatic thing that nobody remembers that earlier in that game, Jose Canseco hit a freaking grand slam, which is where they got all of their runs in that game anyway. But there you go. Follow-up question from Jay was, why cut payroll now instead of in 2018 when a ton of money falls off the books? Is Mike Ilitch calling the shots, or has his son Chris stepped in?
This is really kind of the thing that we're talking about earlier. I think that, you know, like we said, part of the reason for cutting payroll now is because you can get a little bit more back in terms of trades. Like we said, JD Martinez, you can get something for him now. Ian Kinsler's value was pretty high right now. You have some other guys that you could potentially ship out and maybe get a little bit of value for too. And so, you know, cutting payroll now and kind of cutting things off maybe a little bit early does give you the chance to kind of get ahead of the curve and potentially, you know, get some better prospects back in the pipeline. But we'll see. I'd still like them to stand pat a little bit more than it seems like they're prepared to. But, you know, there's a lot of offseason left, and so we'll see what happens.
It really does come down to when do you want your prospects ready? Would you like them ready in a year and a half, or would you like them ready in 4 years? And that's really all it comes down to. You let all these guys walk off their contracts next year, and then you get comp picks that won't be ready for 4 or 5 more years. Or you can trade them and try to get guys who are closer to being able to contribute to the team. As far as whether Mike Ilitch is calling the shots or whether it's Chris, I think there's a clear change in philosophy from last year till this year. Just think about the fact that when we started the offseason last year, Al Avila came in with a freaking shopping list. Like, he knew exactly what he wanted. I need 2 starting pitchers. I need 2 relievers. I need an outfielder. He knew what he wanted. He knew the names he was going after. Suddenly, it's like he turned a corner, you know, this offseason. And I have to believe that's because he's been given a new mandate, which is not go buy more stuff. It's sell some stuff.
I don't know. We'll see.
We shall see. Corey McKee says, if you had to trade one, Verlander or Miggy?
God, I really don't want to talk about this.
What is your attachment here?
They're Justin Verlander and Miguel Cabrera. Okay. What other attachment does there need to be?
You are usually much more coldly logical about this stuff.
I know. If I had to, I guess I'd say Miguel Cabrera, just because there's just kind of something about having Verlander as a Tiger for his entire career.
Yeah.
And to have him span the gap from 2006 to, you know, the division title runs in 2011 to 2014 and potentially anything beyond that, I think would be pretty cool. But I really don't want to think about either one of them wearing another uniform.
Yeah, nobody really does. And that's I should have read the rest of the question, because Corey asks, and if either or both are traded, what kind of return would you expect? By the way, this sucks. So I feel you, Corey. This does suck to even have to be thinking about it. I don't think either of those guys are going anywhere, but I absolutely agree with you, Rob. Justin Verlander was drafted into the Tigers system. He came all the way up through the minor league system. You know, his whole career has been in the old English D. He gets the slight advantage because, let's face it, both of these guys are probably Hall of Fame bound. I think the last numbers I looked at showed Verlander was like just slightly above the threshold of Bill James, formula for Hall of Fame. So yeah, you're going to get him in the Hall of Fame anyway. It's not like, you know, one's a super awesome player and one's kind of just average. I'll take the guy that came up all the way through the system. Sorry, Miggy. I mean, dang. Yeah, that's just a bad question.
Right. See, don't want to do it.
What kind of return would you expect for those guys?
I mean, you'd get a pretty ridiculous haul for them, even with the contracts that they have right now. Verlander's is almost, dare we say, a bargain at this point. Mm-hmm. With the way that other pitchers are going to be paid, and with him only having a few more years left on his deal, I think you could get a pretty, especially for him, I think you get a pretty good haul in return. You look back at like some of the ones, like when Zach Greinke was traded, you know, the Royals got a pretty sizable haul. You know, guys like Lorenzo Cain and Alcides Escobar, guys that became part of their team that won the World Series, really. And then I guess when Greinke was traded again, the Brewers, who had traded for him from the Royals, got a pretty decent haul in return too. That's kind of the closest comparison I can think of off the top of my head, as far as like a top level ace level pitcher that was traded recently for prospects. And so, I mean, you're going to get, you know, some guys who can really be part of your future. It's just, you know, will they pan out?
Yeah, but it goes back to that philosophy of, you'll get in return probably roughly what you gave up to get the guy in the first place. And think about what the Tigers gave up to get Miguel Cabrera. And I know a lot of those guys didn't pan out, so to speak. But at the time, when they traded to get Miguel Cabrera, they gave up, like, what, 4 or 5 prospects, including Andrew Miller, who was at the time, like, considered a number one, you know,
prospect. Miller and Maben were both considered top 10 prospects in all of baseball at
right,
that point.
Right.
And so that was a pretty sizable haul, and I don't necessarily think the Tigers would get that much in return at this point. But to get something like that, to get a real kind of top level prospect like that, I think would be what they would expect.
All right, carrying on. Sunshine asks, so Salty is out, and rumor is Avila may bring back Alex Avila as the backup catcher. What are your thoughts? What are the chances, good or bad?
I think the chances are pretty good. The Tigers are going to be looking for a cheap backup catcher, and Alex Avila is a cheap backup catcher. The organization is very familiar with him. He's pretty familiar with most of the pitching staff, or maybe part of the pitching staff at this point. A lot of the guys that he was – well, no, I mean, a lot of the guys that he was catching
they're not
have
there
really
anymore.
Kind of moved on.
Yeah.
You know, if you look, four-fifths of that starting rotation wasn't here when Alex Avila was here. And so we'll see. I really want it to happen just because so much of the fan base is going to be so pissed. And I want to see all of those comments come back because they'll just be funny to me now.
The wrong part of the fan base would be pissed. And that's what you want. You want the bandwagoners to be all upset because Alex Avila has a 215 batting average. And
not even bandwagoners so much. There's just a lot of people who, you know, those who think that batting average is a very good measure of offensive performance and whatnot. I just want to see that happen because I think a lot of people are going to be angry about it, and it would just warm the cold reaches of my heart.
Man, you're a strange, strange person. But I'm with you. I'm with you. I like a little bit of chaos. I like a little bit of anguish for the right reasons. And let's face it, they said, Al Avila said last year that they wanted to bring Alex Avila. They did want to sign him. But he felt like... you know, only being able to give him backup duty where Alex had the chance of getting some more full-time, more innings with the White Sox. You know, he said that Alex left money on the table in order to go for more playing time with the White Sox. So at this point, who knows? He's a year older. Like you said, he could be had. What did the White Sox get? $2 million for him, I think?
It was like $2.5 million, and he didn't really have the greatest year last year. So I think his value is going to be fairly low at this point. And I think that if anyone, I don't think anyone's going to offer him like a starter level job. He actually had a 732 OPS last year. That's a lot better than I had anticipated. But the injury concerns were still there. He only played in 57 games. And so I think that everyone, anyone that offers him a contract is going to be more of kind of a backup level one at this point. And, if anyone's going to offer you a contract and if your dad's the one calling, you're probably going to pick up the phone for that one.
And now we're back to. The scenarios.
I'm trying to sow these seeds here. Okay, I want this to happen, and I want people to be angry about it.
Because somewhere there's a Mrs. Alavila who's watching over. So did you call Alex? Did you call him and make him an offer yet? You get on the phone. He doesn't have a job.
Didn't Alavila say that like his entire family was wearing White Sox gear last year?
He said that the holidays were rough. He said that Mama was not happy. So yeah, he felt the pressure. So. Which is great. I love the idea of that. And now the poor kid's like probably living at home with them because he's out of a job. Did you look for work today? Talk to your father. He might have something for you. Oh, geez. All right. We have three questions here from Rick Fuller. He wants to know possible trade partners for Verlander, Kinsler, JD, and Jose, and then the players we could possibly get back. And... that's
the interesting one is Kinsler, really, because I mean you look, he's had a couple great seasons with the Tigers. He could really kind of bring back a decent prospect package. And hold on, and oh no, Kyle Schwarber just doubled off the top of the wall. I thought that ball was out.
Oh, see,
kind of live podcasting here. That looked gone off the bat, but nope, double off the wall for Schwarber. Anyway, so getting back to what I was saying, The Tigers could potentially deal Ian Kinsler, but there aren't a lot of teams out there that need second baseman right now. I mean, look around at like a lot of the contenders, the Cubs are set there. A lot of the other teams that made the playoffs this year are pretty set at that position. You could think, maybe the Yankees need someone. I can't think off the top of my head who their second baseman is. The Red Sox have so many that they're moving them to other positions right now in Mookie Betts and Yoan Moncada. And so, like, the only real obvious trade partner I can think of off the top of my head are the Dodgers. And would they pay him to do that, or would they just, pull someone out of their pretty robust farm system at this point? I don't know what they have coming down through the pipeline, and so maybe they just look elsewhere for that. And, when you only have one potentially trade partner for a guy, I just don't see that coming together all too often.
This is the thing that I'm worst at when it comes to, like, making predictions like this, because it's... I don't know the other team's farm systems well enough to know or even say like, oh yeah, the Dodgers need a second baseman or, whatever. It gets even more complicated when you think about the fact that let's say they want to get in with the Cubs, right? Because the Cubs have a great farm system. I'd love to see them steal Eloy Jimenez down from, he's in single A right now, but he was fun to watch. But let's say they want to get in with the Cubs. Well, they don't, the Cubs don't need a second baseman. They've got Baez, right? You don't even know about the possibility, though, of swinging a 3 or 4 team trade to move some pieces around and get what you need. Once you're into that realm, it's like, shoot, man, I have no idea. I have no idea what's possible, who the potential partners could be. At this point, Rick, the answer to your question for me is pick the teams that have the best farm systems and start there. So go to the Dodgers, go to the, you know, I think the Red Sox still have a good farm system. The Cubs obviously are loaded for years to come. Try one of those and then see what you get.
Yeah, and I mean, the scenario only gets more complicated when you look at a guy like J.D. Martinez. Like, what team would want a power-hitting corner outfielder who, you know, hits 30-plus home runs a year? Pretty much all of them.
All of them do. And this is another great reason why you get on this now and start trading guys now, because we talked about this. This current system, market, you know, is not going to be super great. Well, I'm going down a path that I don't want to go down. So I'm going to come back to that in a minute. Let me get to Rick's second question. Possible surprise Tiger farm system players who could make the club.
I don't know if there are going to be many surprises out of spring training. We've talked about guys like Tyler Collins and Stephen Moya and even Dixon Machado, who are out of minor league options next year. And so the Tigers will have to make a decision on at least one of those guys, depending on what shakes out through the offseason. Like, you know, let's say they're going in spring training tomorrow. They would have those three guys plus Andrew Romine plus a backup catcher, and they need to find, you know, finagle those five guys into 4 bench spots. And so one of Collins or Moya or Machado would be designated for assignment and kind of told to go packing. And so I think that between those concerns, as well as the roster relatively being set at this point, I just don't see many ways like someone could really surprise. And like on the pitching side, like if Joe Jimenez makes the roster, is anyone really going to be that surprised?
Right, right.
So
he's going to make it, and that's not a surprise. We already talked about Al Avila has his eye on Kristen Stewart. If he makes it, that's a little bit of a, hey, wow, that's early, but it's not
if
a
he,
surprise.
If I would be very, very surprised if he made the team out of spring training next year. But otherwise, no, I'm not going to be that shocked. The other thing is there just aren't that many prospects in the higher levels of the minor leagues that would actually make the team. And so if someone that we're not talking about makes the team, yeah, I would be surprised by that too.
If anybody out of Toledo makes the team, I'm going to be surprised because it's just not that good of a pool to pick from. I'll throw out one name and say Michael Gerber, maybe. You know, that would be a fun surprise.
Yeah. And again, he would be one that I wouldn't expect. Like, if he made it at some point in 2017, I wouldn't be too shocked. But right out of the team in spring training, I would be very surprised.
Final question from Rick is, name some targets for the Tigers in the 2017 MLB draft.
How about the you know, high school pitcher who throws really hard?
I don't know if they're going to go after another pitcher.
I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, it's I don't know enough of that.
Really far away from that.
The thing is, if you really want those kind of questions, you talk to Brian Sikowski, because he's the guy, and he's on Twitter at @B_Sikowski_PG. He's out there scouting guys at the high school level, the college level, all the time, and he knows exactly who's up and coming, and he would be a great one to ask, you know, to get a better answer on that.
The Tigers are also towards the end of the first round this year, and that just makes it a little bit more difficult.
Sure.
Like, when they were, you know, when they had the number 9 pick last year, I mean, there are like a handful of guys that they could potentially be looking at. We started, you know, kind of profiling guys at Bless You Boys earlier in the year, and, you know, we picked out guys like Manning and Riley Pint, guys who the Tigers were interested in. And a lot of the guys we picked were, you know, the top picks in the draft. Like, I mean, you go 1 through 12 or whatever it was, and those were pretty much all the guys that we had written posts on. Once you get down a little bit lower than that, things just change so much. There are so many other things that teams are looking at, whether it's signability concerns or, you know, how guys are performing in high school and college. Like, those guys are going through their seasons as the draft happens, and that just makes it all the more difficult to really kind of assess who's playing well, who's, you know, whose stock is rising, whose stock is falling, and there are just so many things going on.
You mentioned Riley Pine. He was the big, you know, the big draft stud last year. Even the Tigers were possibly in on that, but he went to the Rockies. So there is your perfect trade scenario for 2017. Ship Justin Upton and all of his ridiculous home run power off to the Rockies. Let him hit 70 dingers a year for them, and we get Riley Pint. Yeah? Come on. Who says no?
Probably the Rockies, but
probably,
I don't know.
The Rockies, I would imagine. Although, who knows? You don't want to be a pitcher in the Rockies system, right? You just don't. That's where pitchers go to die.
Yeah, you almost kind of wonder if, like, whenever Pine got drafted, he was just like, damn it.
No, not the Rockies. Not the Rockies. I'll go back to college, man. I don't care. Yeah. All right. Question from Brett Yoder. How hard is it to come up with podcast topics 4 weeks after the season ended and nothing has happened yet?
Actually kind of easy when El Avila's saying stuff like that, but yeah, had he not gone off and not said a bunch of things during the press conference, we probably wouldn't even be recording right now.
No, we'd be running reruns for the rest of the month probably. So it's thanks again, Al, for making our job so much easier. It's gonna be another loaded off season.
He really had a knack for that last year, and it'll be interesting to see if that happens for better or worse this year.
See, we have the theory that he listens to the show and responds accordingly. He heard us, you know, say that last week, like, yeah, it's going to be a slow off season. We're not going to have much to talk about. And he was like, no, guys, I got your back. I'll take care of you. The next day he comes.
And it was interesting, like last year, like a couple times it was like right after we recorded, something happened. Mm-hmm. And then there were like once or twice where like right before we recorded, something happened. I think it was like when they signed Upton.
Yes.
It had happened like right. It was like the day of the show. You know, maybe a couple hours before we recorded it, and it was like, you know, tear up the outline. Let's talk about this.
It was amazing how many times last year he either did something right before the show or right after the show. It was like always within a day or two of us recording. So, and here it was again. We recorded last Monday. The next day, 24 hours later, he says, hey, we're basically going to do some really cool stuff with the system.
Maybe it's a Tuesday thing.
I was thinking about that. I honestly was. I wonder if he just tends to make his moves on the weekends and then, you know, gets the information out by Tuesday.
Well, no, I mean, it probably happens on like Monday or Tuesday because you get back to the office on Monday. Mm-hmm. You're kind of dragging a little bit. You don't really want to do much. Like Monday morning, you're kind of just trying to get by, whatever. Monday afternoon, you start doing a little bit of work. But it's really not until Tuesday that you really get going.
Yeah, unless it's Al's, like, he's taking care of all the mafia business on Mondays. You know, you got to try and trench coats and all that kind of stuff. And then by Tuesday, now he's ready to kind of wheel and deal with the rest of the layman. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun season. Final question from Kale. Does the idea of Justin Verlander going into the Hall of Fame in a Tigers hat mean something to you guys? And if so, would that affect or weigh into your decision to trade him if you were Al Avila?
I mean, I'm glad that I'm not the one that has to trade Justin Verlander because I definitely, you know, I definitely value him wearing that Tigers hat in the Hall of Fame, him being with the Tigers for his entire career. And so I want to see that. You know, Al Avila has other things on his mind. He has to look at a more, you know, kind of 1,000-foot view, whereas I get to be biased and selfish as a fan and just say, I want this and hope that it happens.
Yeah, it does mean something. I mean, absolutely it does. And I would think that at this point, even if they did trade Verlander and his contract runs out in 2020 or 2019, I would think that he's going into the Hall of Fame in a Tigers hat regardless, unless he gets traded and just like, I don't know, wins 4 Cy Youngs for some other team.
I mean, yeah, but still, I think it would be different if, you know, if he was traded away and still wore the Tigers hat in the Hall of Fame. I think it would be different than if he was there for his entire career and then took the Tigers hat into the Hall of Fame. There's definitely a difference there.
It's definitely not something you want to see happen. And so, yes, Kale, it does mean something to us to see him go into the Hall of Fame with a Tigers hat. And no, I do not want to be Al Avila and have to sit there and say, Justin Verlander is not a person, you know, that pitches for the Tigers. He's a set of numbers represented, you know, on this budget spreadsheet that I now have to decide, you know, dollar for war and what I get back and that kind of thing. Al Avila has been around, you know, since the Dombrowski days too. So he kind of grew up with these guys too. I would imagine it's not necessarily an easy thing. But again, thankfully, Verlander, Cabrera, they have 5 and 10 rights. They're probably not going anywhere. That's another side question for you, Rob. Do you feel like, because I do feel like it's got to be harder to even come to the negotiating table with another team if the player you're proposing has to, you know, okay the trade first.
Yeah, and with both Verlander and Cabrera, they have options towards the end of those deals, and so they could, you know, potentially hold out on a trade and say, like, oh, you need to guarantee this last year or these last couple years of my contract, and that just makes it a lot more difficult for the other team to say yes. You know, if they only know that they're only getting 3 years of Justin Verlander versus 5 when he's well into his mid and late 30s, that really kind of changes the game, and so I think that between that and the 5 and 10 rights and, you know, the big contracts they have, I just don't see any way that they really get moved.
Yeah, I can't imagine being the other trade partner in that situation, sitting down, having to have this conversation of like, okay, in theory, hypothetically, if Justin Verlander says yes, could we do this, this, and that? Well, yes, in theory, if he says yes, we could do that. Okay, good. In theory, when could we get, you know, screw it, man. Give me something that you can, you know, guarantee at the table. I can trade you JD Martinez because he can't say no. You know, I can guarantee you it's going to be this, this, this. So, yeah. Anyway, 5-10 rights, man. I think it's a non-starter for a lot of, you know, for a lot of situations, unless for some reason Verlander was saying, hey, I want to be traded. Can you go talk to this team or that team? But I don't see him doing that. All right. That is going to do it for another episode of The Voice of the Turtle, our 50th episode. Rob, any final comments?
No, but I'm just excited to see this this World Series. We had talked a little bit last week about, you know, how this was going to be an interesting chess match between Joe Maddon and Terry Francona.
Yes.
With him adding guys like Salazar and Schwarber to the roster, that's kind of one move that we've seen so far, and it's just going to be a lot of fun, I think. I'm really hoping this series, you know, I'm not really rooting for one side or the other. I just really hope it goes 6 or 7 games. Give us a nice long series with, you know, a lot of great moments, and I'll be happy.
And keep Joe West the hell out of it. That's my only other thing, because he is on the umping ump crew. Just keep your out of this and do not take over one of these games. I was joking on Twitter about this. It's like, you don't want that to be part of the panoply of you know, the pantheon of World Series moments. You know, Hosmer's mad dash and Joe Carter's walk-off home run for the Jays, and then there's the time that Joe West threw Chris Bryant out of the game, got out of game 7 in the second inning. Man, just stay out of the game. That's what I'm saying. As for next week, barring any major moves on the Tigers' part, which I don't think there will be because the World Series should still be going on, we will probably take next week off and go ahead and run that rerun of Dan Dickerson's interview. So look for that next week, and then we'll probably end up being live the week after that, because I'm sure by then we'll at least know something about Cameron Maybin's option or K-Rod's option or whatever else is going on. We're not going to get to take breaks, Rob. I feel like Alavila is going to keep us hopping.
Yeah, we, you know, didn't take many breaks throughout last offseason and went all right.
Because he wouldn't stop making deals every other week. Like, dude, it's Thanksgiving. Remember he made like a move the day before or something?
Yeah, I remember that.
Craziness. All right, so there it is. Remember, we are only one half of the conversation and you're the other half. So leave us your comments at westofwoodward.com or find us on Twitter. I'm at hookslide23. Rob is at BYBRob. And the podcast is at VOTT Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes. And on behalf of Rob Rojacki and hot stove watchers everywhere, this is Hookslide saying have a great week. Let's go Cubbies. And we'll see you next time on The Voice of the Turtle.